Welcome to Career Buzz, Canada's unique radio conversation that empowers lives, enriches careers, and energizes organizations. Today on your show, two inspiring career stories. Hi, I'm Mark Franklin, practice leader of Career Cycles, a career management social enterprise. I'm pleased to be your host today on Career Buzz. Thanks for tuning in this morning. After selling her successful internet business in 2006, Cindy Ross Peterson realigned her focus to supporting nonprofit organizations. She donates 1,000 hours of strategic consulting a year, mentors students and new entrepreneurs, and is developing new models for high-impact volunteer Tourism for Boomers. Cindy volunteers as a board member of the University of Toronto Alumni Association, and she'll share her meteoric internet career, her exit and entrance to a new career in life in the second half of today's show. But first, Anne Lavery has been working in radio for over 20 years and has done just about everything along the way. She's been a club and concert reporter, traffic and news reporter, and even a ski and snowboard reporter. More recently, Anne has been a writer, news editor, and is currently the newsroom coordinator at 680 News in Toronto. She teaches radio, news, and career management at Centennial College so she can share stories and tips to break into the exciting world of broadcasting. Anne Lavery, welcome to Career Buzz.
It's nice to be here.
So what do you like about your radio career?
What do I like about? Oh, it's always different. There's something new. There's every which way you learn. It's current. It's exciting. And it's never the same thing twice in a day.
And what are all the things that you do? If you're now you're a newsroom coordinator, what does that look like?
Oh, what does that mean? Everybody asks me, and I kind of look at them and kind of go, yeah, what does that mean? We have about 80 people here. And I have to coordinate where everybody is. So a part of that is scheduling. Part of that is rescheduling. Part of that is to make sure that we have enough staff when we have elections or there is Olympics. We have to coordinate. We have to think weeks in advance. Because this is a 24-hour radio station, it's somewhat of an assembly line. You have to keep it going all the time. So that's one of the things I do. I do the scheduling. I also bring in part-timers. I bring in interns. That's one of the big things I do here. We have quite an army of interns, meaning they are students who are in college or university who need hours for graduate purposes or for course credits. And they do 160 hours, 200 hours here in the newsroom. And it provides them what they need in the respects of for their academic career. What else do I do here? I'm also the voice of the 680 website, the 680 promo. I do a feature called the Today's Parent Report. I do two of those a week. I interview the editor-in-chief of the Today's Parent magazine. And then I do 40-second stories that run across Canada.
So a lot of variety, a lot of juggling, interesting things.
You know what? It's not all on air anymore.
Yes.
It's not all off air. I get this wonderful mix of both.
And what personal and professional strengths, skills and strengths do you draw on to be successful in your radio career?
I'm very much a team player. I'm extremely organized. I'm very detail-oriented. I could juggle a lot of balls in the air. I can have a lot of things going at once. Very good with time management. So there's so many things that go into doing all of this. And like I said, there's two different sides. One is a broadcasting side. The other is sort of, you know, management role. So there's the two different dichotomies there.
Now, take me back. How far back in your life does your interest in radio go?
Oh, when I was a little kid, I knew right away when I was little I wanted to. It has to go back to like elementary school. My parents are from former Yugoslavia. They're Slovenia. They came here 60, 70 years ago, just after the Second War. And they had always listened to a competing radio station. I will not mention their name. And they would listen to the news all the time. The news was on. And I knew when I came home one day at lunch and I was listening to one female. There was only one woman that I ever heard on the radio, and it was Betty Kennedy.
Right.
And she did a talk show. And I would sit there because Mom would always be doing the ironing, and she'd be listening to the talk show, and I'd be eating my lunch, and I would listen to this woman, and I kind of thought one day, you know what? I'd like to do what she does, talk with people on the radio.
So
that's where it came from.
It goes way back.
I think people kind of know instinctively what they would like to do. It's one of those things like, hey, that's kind of cool. That's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
That would be fun.
Maybe enough people don't pay attention to those early clues, and then they end up doing a lot of different things. Some people for sure know what they want to do from childhood, and lots of other people are still figuring it out.
Well, here's the funny thing. So I sort of got to it in a roundabout way. Years later, it's grade 13, when there still was a grade 13, we had to decide where do we want to go to school to, you know, higher education, post-secondary. And I went to my mom and I said, Mom, I really want to go to Ryerson. I want to take radio and television. And she looks at me and she says, no, you have to go to university. You have to get a university education, not a college education.
Isn't that amazing? Let me just stop you there, because that's that's such a common perception, even now with parents who say, this is the thing that my child should do. They should go to university because it supposedly is the golden key that opens up all the doors.
Exactly.
Right? And yet, back in those days, you wanted to do something a little more practical that was focused on your career, and there's your parents saying something else. Where do you think your mom was coming from when she made that recommendation to you?
You know what? I think, I'll tell you where it comes from. I'll tell you exactly where she came from. Okay. My mom lived through a war.
Yes.
In a war, she told me, Anne, they could take everything from you. They could take your house, they could take your horse, they could take your car. There's one thing they could never take away: your education.
So it was deeply rooted from her personal experience.
You got that right.
Yes.
You have to go get a good education, prepare yourself. No matter who comes in, they can't take that away from you.
Interesting.
And she was right.
So what happened? What did you pursue?
This is funny. So I ended up looking at her going, okay. So I went to University of Toronto, and I started off, I don't know what I want to take. Let's try the basics. So I was trying sociology, took a little psychology. So that's what I got a degree in, sociology, sociology major, psychology minor, and this is the funny thing. When I was in second year university, I got a part-time job with a radio station.
Well, that seems part of the experiential story. In fact, you know, many people's work and volunteer experiences parallel their education, and it doesn't necessarily mean that you need to go and get a job in the Department of Sociology out there in the economy.
No.
How did that first job come about?
It was a very long, very strange story. If you've got, I won't be too long. I won't bore you with the details, but quick and dirty. I was dating this guy. This guy would work down in Kitchener in a flea market, and I would go with him every Sunday down there, and I would just sit in the office and read my book until he finished what he was doing, and we'd drive home. And one day, I was sitting in the office, and there was a lost little girl. And the two managers came in with this little girl, and she was screaming. She was scared. And the two managers kept on passing each other the microphone, the PA system, saying, no, you go over and tell everybody about the lost child. And the other guy, Harry, would say, no, Helen, you do it. And I finally looked at them, and I said, really, guys? So I got up, and I grabbed the microphone out of their hands. And I just pressed the button, and I started talking. Attention, ladies and gentlemen. We have a lost little girl. She's wearing a pink shirt, blue jeans, and she has blonde hair. Anyway, long story short, parents came. Good, happy story. Next weekend they came. There was something else going on in the parking lot. They looked at me and said, go on the PA system and tell them about what's going on in the parking lot, because it's a big, big problem.
Yes.
I said, fine. So I did. The third weekend I came, I went to them and said, this is my idea. I write commercials for the vendors. I put them on every 10 minutes. They give me prizes, and at 3 o'clock, we'll do a huge contest. They just looked at me. So a part of me is, what I'm really good at is finding a deficiency or something that needs to be plugged. So I realized I can do advertising for vendors. I could write them 30-second commercials. I could tell them at booth 154 they've got Teflon pots and pans. At booth number 54 they got Levi jeans on sale. They donate this, and then I hold a contest at 3 o'clock that retains shoppers. It was a win-win.
That's a great story. It comes totally naturally. It just comes out of your lived experience of being at the flea market and so on.
And then I had one guy who came up to me at the end of one of these contests and said, you should put in a demo tape. At the time, it was Mix 99. And to which I said, well, what's a demo tape? I don't know. But I figured out real fast. And I got the part-time job. And from there, I networked.
So that first job was at Mix 99.
Yeah.
After that experience of being on the loudspeaker at the flea market.
Yep. So I went from, and I was. They kind of joked around. They said I was a flea market queen. And, yes, I would go on air, and all the kids would come around, try to make funny faces and break me up and all that kind of stuff. But my first time, on air was Friday and Saturday nights. I became what they called a hotspot prowler. And I would drive to 7-8 bars on a Friday night and Saturday night. We would report on the cover, the entertainment, who was playing that night, the ambiance, all that kind of stuff. So we started learning how to do just little reports.
That's a great story. And the hotspot prowler story. So we're talking to Ann Lavery here, the hotspot prowler. She's the newsroom coordinator at 680 News, and you're listening to Career Buzz here on CIUT. I'm your host, Mark Franklin. And great story to start off. It's so interesting, the university degree and then the parallel experience of what you were really doing in the world, and then this job came along. Is that what happened when you graduated from U of T? You said you took the degree at the university. How did that then lead to the next step in your radio career?
How would this work? So I think university, even though I didn't get formally trained to be on air, etc., university taught me research skills, and it taught me to investigate and to learn and to be open-minded. And so I think those things I brought to the table. That's right. I was working part-time at Eaton's, and Eaton's wanted to put me through their management training program. And at the same time, because I was still working part-time on radio and I had networked, somebody called me up and said they're looking for a traffic reporter for radio station, 97.3, Easy 97.3. And I drove, and I knew the city, and I kind of thought, you know what, I don't want to turn around when I'm 40 and say, I should have tried. So I went for the interview, and I got the job.
Right on. So you left Eaton's in the history.
And that's the way it went, too. So I think I made the right decision, 25 years later, to stay with radio and not go into management.
Yes. I think your story is so illustrative. If we have university students or recent grads listening, I found it really interesting to hear what university gave you, this research skills and an investigative mindset and being open-minded.
Yeah.
It's not so much the body of knowledge that you're learning, the sociology or the psychology or whatever. It's really about these other skills that you develop and use in your further career.
Your focus, your dedication. You've got to read X number of, textbooks. You've got to write, a 5,000-word report or a 50,000-word report. I'll tell you one thing, though. It's harder to write 30 seconds worth of copy than it is 50,000 words. I'll just say that.
Yeah. The 50,000 words gives you a head start, though, on being able to write those 30-second spots.
But like I did, like I said, it really did. It focused on what other bigger things. It's true. It's not, learning about, Carl Jung and Sigmund Freud. It was really, the learning education of just, open mind and put everything into order and to see things that are not there. Like I said, I have this ability. I look for deficiencies in an organization, and that's how I fill.
Nice. So what's one other turning point you can share with us? In your radio career, you've done a lot of different things over the course of 20-plus years. What's one other turning point within the broadcasting and radio career that you can share with us?
I've done numerous things. What I think is still a very nice pat on the back, and when I had Centennial College, which is hooked up with U of T, come knocking on my door asking me if I would teach. And it was something that I hadn't really considered all that much, but they wanted me to, you know, take what I've learned actually on the job training in the newsroom and then come back to school and teach these students. And I told my mom, I said, do you think that, you know, 25 years ago or 25 years later that if U of T came back, you know, Centennial College, because it's the joint journalism program, came knocking on my door to teach at the school that I graduated from in a course that in a background that I didn't even study for, I kind of felt that was, I sort of arrived, and I sort of, well, I did it all on my own. Like, university gave me the skills, I came here, I've learned, and now they knocked on my door and said, will you share these skills?
Nice. So that's an interesting opportunity then to start sharing the skills from something that you've built. You've built those skills and experiences over the years. What was that experience like for you to stand up in front of the group there the first time that you were trying to share what you had learned with students who wanted to learn specifically what you actually had wanted to learn way back when but didn't when you chose U of T over the Ryerson program?
Honestly, in a weird sort of way, I feel like I missed out. Sometimes I feel like I want to go back to school and just see what did I miss. I think it's been a wonderful ride in the sense where I have been able to steer my path and even though that I steer it, there are corners and blind spots that come around. And here's one thing I've learned in the last couple of months: always say yes to opportunities. It doesn't matter what it is. Just say yes. It gives you the opportunity to try something new. It may not work out, but you tried it. You said yes.
That's interesting. We had a guest on Career Buzz just a couple of weeks ago who said something really similar, completely different career story than yours, different area, but their story also illustrated that by saying yes, there were doors that opened, even when that yes wasn't necessarily what they thought or expected or even wanted at the time, but there was a glimmer of possibility in it.
Yeah.
And that seemed to work. So now that you're working with these students, you know, and I know you also teach a career management course there for people who want to move ahead in their radio or broadcast career. What are you finding? What are some of the things that you're finding successful that students are doing to access these opportunities? You know, what are some tips if people listening now are interested in getting into the field?
Well, go back to the basics. I mean, really, when it comes to the interview process, et cetera, really go back to the basics. I'm going to give you an example. I had a girl come in a couple of weeks ago. She knew, for several weeks that she was going to have an interview. Although she was a previous intern with us, I was still quite surprised the way she didn't come prepared. She didn't come with a hard copy of her resume. She actually came with leggings, leg warmers, and big lace-up boots. And I brought her in to do a read. And yes, I understand that this is radio, but at the end of the day, it's still an interview. And throughout the interview process, I wanted to introduce her to my news director. And I had to say at the end that I had to say, you know, I was a little embarrassed by the way you've dressed. I said, you have multicolored fingernails, you got leggings, got leg warmers and boots. I'm surprised you're not more prepared. Now, that's just one person. I think that most of the students these days are quite on the ball. They've learned now to have online portfolios, which I think is very important. I think, at least the students I'm trying to teach, I want them to get out of the mindset of the same boring covering letters.
Yes.
I want them to just jump out of the box. It doesn't have to be a traditional written covering letter. I've seen so many new and creative ones because really at the end of the day, that's supposed to make you stand out. That is supposed to, when you read that, you want to go, who is this person? I want to meet this person.
Yes.
And when you get those completely stuffed covering letters with a font of size 8. And believe me, most of us are getting up in age. We can't read some of these things. And it's the same thing, you know, where I'm a team player and I'm a good individual and I'm, you know, it's the same thing. It's like, tell me more about you.
It might have been one of those cover letters, Anne, that somebody wrote for them. They spent $200 to get somebody to write it for them, and it was one of these boring letters because the person didn't know them.
You know, if somebody told me this years ago, and I believe this, the resume is like the meal. It's the meat and the potatoes. The covering letter is the knife and the fork. It helps you digest the meal. So I would like to see personality on the covering letter, and I would like to see meat and potatoes in the resume. I find quite a few times there are more questions with a very short resume than I have answers.
Nice. It's an interesting perspective to really use that cover letter to show who you are. I know we had Terry O'Reilly on this show, who has that CBC radio show, and he said something really similar and to what you're saying. And you know, it was all about this cover letter. He reads the cover letter first when
I do too.
So there you go, listeners. Like the cover letter, you can't always control what people are going to look at. But I'm Terry, and now you're saying something really similar, is to really make that cover letter stand out, try and really represent who you are and answer some of those questions that the resume might not answer.
Well, you want to see personality. You want to see what type of person this is, if they're upbeat, what they think about themselves. Another thing about a resume or a covering letter that I never, ever, ever, ever like to read is what the job is going to do for them.
Yeah, exactly.
Frankly, I don't care. I want to know what you're going to do for me. And this is the time for you to tell me what you're going to do for us as an organization.
And is this for the internship? You mentioned an internship, and people may be curious about that. It is certainly a way these days to break into the world of work. What can you say about the internship that's available at 680 News?
Well, yes, you make a very good point. It is a great way to break into the industry or get hired on. So we bring in about 40 interns a year at the college, university level. Spring, summer, winter, fall, about 10 in each. Out of each group, we have a mentorship program for those that, you know, excel. So anybody who shows exemplary qualities in writing or editing or voice work, we like to give them specialized help where you can talk to several full-time or part-time mentors here at the radio station. You could send them your scripts of stories. You could send them your voice work, and they will critique it. What we also do at the end, we always need people. And one of the beautiful things, and this is important for students to understand, that internships are not a blow-off. It's not just I need my hours and get out. We look at people who we can hire. We've often brought, I can't tell you how many people the newsroom here has hired over the years through the internship program. They excelled. We got to see what they could do. Their qualities, their demeanor, their personality, and when the time was right, we needed a role filled, we'd go back knocking on their door.
Right on. How many of those 40 interns a year would you hire?
Usually two around Christmas, if you're lucky to get into the fall group, because Lord knows I make stars at Christmas. With that Christmas schedule, there's 2 weeks of thinness. So
yes,
we need to always hire a couple of people, but I would say about four a year.
Yeah. Great. Well, you heard it here. If you're interested, and can people apply online? Do they go to the 680 News site?
You know what? That is next on my list. I'm glad you're kicking me in the behind to get that going. I've been saying that for about 6-8 months. I got to get it online. I just haven't sat down and actually written something for them to actually put it there. They usually get a hold of me. Usually I know quite a few teachers at schools, various schools throughout the province, and they knock on my door. But I promise, it'll be there. I hope to do it by the fall.
And those programs, that's an interesting point. Like, where are you getting interns from? Is it programs like the one you're teaching at Centennial? Do you also go to the universities, kind of like where you came from, and recruit interns?
Actually, they kind of come knocking on our door. So uh-huh. This is a process. I find out they need qualifications, whether it's Guelph Humber, or it's Seneca at York, or the Seneca students. It could be, where else? Oh, Fanshawe, Mohawk, Sheridan, Centennial, U of T students I've had. What happens is that four times a year I send out a mass interview, mass email, and they respond by sending me the stuff that I need. Most of it is, I would really like to see your news writing ability. I ask you to pick up a newspaper or go online, select three stories, and write me two versions of each story, 30 seconds in length, broadcast style. When they do that, I read them over, I kind of grade them, I get an idea of where they are. The first thing you really are noticed for, I think, in this industry is your writing ability. And so if you're a strong writer, and that is clear, you know that the internship for this student is already half done because they get it.
Yes.
They know how to write it.
Nice. Thanks for that background on it. And Lavery, just to wrap up our interview and to bring it back to the personal side of the story, given all of the twists and turns in your career and life, that some of what you've shared here, what can you share with listeners about what you've learned about making good career and life choices?
A few things. Always strive for a healthy balance. It's not all academics and it's not all work. You got to enjoy both. And you really have to enjoy what you do. Otherwise, it is work. It has to be something that you really love and not necessarily something what your parents want you to do. The other thing is, that, like I had mentioned, say yes to opportunities. Because if you say yes to one, other doors open. So many others happen. I said yes to Centennial, and as it turns out, you know, then I'm invited into, you know, the Canadian Association of Journalists to speak there, to do other things, and network with more people. So always keep your options open. Don't close doors. And don't be afraid. Go outside your box. Be a little worried. It makes you feel alive.
That's great advice. Anne Lavery, thank you so much for joining us here on Career Buzz and sharing your story.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it. Bye for now.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
That was Anne Lavery. She's the newsroom coordinator at 680 News here in Toronto, with quite a interesting career story throughout the whole world of radio broadcasting in Ontario. We're going to take a musical break and come right back with Cindy Ross Peterson. Here is The Painter by Neil Young.
Stood before her work. She looked around everywhere. She saw the pictures and she painted them. She picked the colors from the air, green to green, red to red, yellow to yellow. Black to black when the evening comes, blue to blue in the night. It's a long road.
Take my $1.50. Take it all!
Whoa, why are you paying fees?
My credit union only has a few ATMs, so I pay!
Check the back of your debit card for the exchange logo. Your credit union has more than 2,300 ATMs.
That's right, folks. The exchange is your ticket to no-fee withdrawals, deposits, PIN changes, and more at over 2,300 ATMs across Canada. Check the back, Jack. Get the ATM locator app at keepyourchange.ca. Keep your change. Use the exchange.
Thank you to everyone who supported CIUT during the spring membership drive. We're just still 1,600 away from reaching our goal, so don't delay. Become a member today. Donate before May 31st and be entered into the 6 grand prize draws. Go to www.ciut.fm and check out the membership page to make your donation by PayPal or credit card and to find out what you can win. CIUT 89.5 FM. From the roots up, 25 years and counting.
Career Buzz is brought to you by
The Detailing Knights. Your number one choice for waterless auto detailing is now hiring. Please send your resumes to thedetailingknights@gmail.com. Remember, the night way is the right way.
From the roots up. CIUT 89.5 FM. Broadcasting live 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
From Hart House,
University of Toronto.
Back at Career Buzz, I'm your host, Mark Franklin. Before moving on to our next interview, I want to let listeners know about a weekly free teleworkshop, Unearth Career Excitement. It's a teleworkshop tomorrow and every Thursday. Shows you how. Check careercycles.com to register. After selling her successful internet business in 2006, Cindy Ross Peterson realigned her focus to supporting nonprofit organizations. She donates 1,000 hours of strategic consulting a year, mentors students and new entrepreneurs, and is developing a new model for high-impact volunteerism for boomers. Cindy volunteers as a board member for the University of Toronto Alumni Association and supports students and graduates through memberships, through mentorships, hosting the Dinner with 12 Strangers, and keynoting at events like Backpack to Briefcase. Welcome, Cindy Ross Peterson, to Career Buzz.
Thank you very much, Mark.
So what do you like about all the things you're doing these days in your career and life?
Well, I think I now have work-life balance. It's funny that it took me to retirement to achieve that, but I have a mathematical formula, which includes volunteer work, in brackets, fun, and then the same thing everybody else has to deal with, which is chores and health and all that good stuff. So I have this tremendous work-life balance, which allows me to explore both the mental self, the physical self, and have some fun along the way.
Great. Now, what are the things that you're doing? I mentioned the University of Toronto Alumni Association. You're doing some volunteering. You're traveling. What are all these things that make up a typical, let's say, month or year in your life?
Well, on the strategic volunteering side, I do a lot with the university, and it is my pleasure and honor to do so. it's a real vital place to be a part of, and to be among both students and graduates and faculty is a great opportunity. So on the board, we try and find opportunities for alumni to get back connected with the school. I chair an initiative called Community Engagement, which tells stories about alumni that are doing great things in their community. I do speaking gigs, which are more of a motivational or career-based talks. These Dinners with 12 Strangers is a fantastic program. In fact, in 2 weeks, I'm having somewhere between 30 and 50 students at my house, international students, so that they come out, get off campus, have a good meal, see a Canadian home, and interact with each other. And then along the way, you know, whatever comes up, all kinds of events. And so I lend a hand, or I just show up and watch or participate or fund or whatever.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like an ideal mix of activities.
Well, at U of T, it's a great, I mean, it's endless. I've even helped profs, for heaven's sakes. I never thought as an alumni, I'd be useful to the core of the university. But I've put profs in touch with people in industry that they need for their research, and that has been an absolute honor to serve in that capacity. I've been a judge and an advisor on some business case competitions and panels, and there's some fairly senior or serious stuff in there. So I would say to any alumnus, there's something for everybody at U of T if you want to come back home and volunteer. But I do volunteer outside of that. I mean, at the end of June, I'm donning work boots, and I'm going out with Habitat for Humanity Global to help build some homes in Cold Lake, Alberta, of all things, for the Métis community. So it's one of those things that I just said yes to, and never done anything like that before, but we'll see what shakes.
That's great. I think the saying yes theme has come up today. Our earlier guest, one of her big life lessons is just to say yes to all these things that come up, even if they're a little bit surprising or not what you thought.
And I think you're absolutely right. You've heard it before, and it's a common one. And I would say, even though sometimes I am fearful or I don't think it's quite right, you never know what's behind the door.
Yes.
So go.
And what would you say are three strengths, or let's call them signature strengths, three things that you're good at, that you like to do, that you're drawing on to be successful in this varied career in life you've been telling us about?
Well, you know, I have a natural mathematical mind. And so that is what drew me first to logic at U of T, a course that I think I got close to 100%. And that led me into computer science, which led me into a career of technology, and which culminated in owning an internet company, which I sold. So I have that. I love people, and I love exploring people and culture and what makes them tick and what makes them do the things they do and why and all that kind of stuff. And that has led me to work with fantastic people, both teammates as well as clients. It's helped me. I mentor, maybe 30 people, 30 to 50 people on a yearly basis. And it's for the love of making sure that they're on the right track, embracing what they're good at, and helping them in whatever way I can. So I think that's two of those things. And then I think probably, I don't know whether, there's a toss-up between the last two, probably creativity. I mean, I was a candidate for art school, so I have a fair bit of creativity. And so when I look at things, I often look at them sort of upside down from the norm. I'm
yes.
not one to take it just because we've always done it that way doesn't mean I'll take that path. Maybe that led to entrepreneurship.
Nice.
The
so,
other thing is
yeah,
I have a tremendous amount of faith, so I know that I work extremely hard, but I have some faith that the universe is just working the way it should, and if I listen, then I'll be on the right path.
Nice. That's a really interesting one to talk about as a strength, the faith that if you listen hard enough, things will work out.
Yeah, well, it goes with that entrepreneurial theme of being persistent.
Yes. Well, so take me back now. You mentioned that you were part of an internet company that you sold. How far back does all of this go in your career and life story?
Well, it's I'll give you the very short version. So I did do, along with a commerce degree at U of T, I did a major in computer science. I did that for fun, actually, because I found that easy. That's a little bit disturbing to some, I'm sure. And then what happened is when I got out into the workforce, small computers or microcomputers started, and I was the only kid on the block who had any training in that, so I got to play with that. That led me into a career of computing rather than in a career of accounting. And then by chance, again, I was living in a house downtown and was introduced to an entrepreneur who was struggling, and so with software development, that, and I said yes and jumped ship from corporate, went into an entrepreneurial environment and learned a lot, then started my own technology firm when I was 30.
So that first one, the one that you just claimed was by chance, you ran into somebody who had his own business at the time and you joined forces with him. Is that what happened?
Well, what happened is we were introduced. Somebody knocked at, well, actually the landlord. I was living in half a house downtown in Queen West.
Yes.
And the landlord was an artist, and he had this pal or this acquaintance. And on a Saturday afternoon, he just knocked on my door and said, "Cindy, you know something about software development, don't you?" I said, "Yes." Said, "You know something about running teams?" And yes, I'd run software development teams when I was really quite young. And so I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Well, if we take you for dinner, you know, I'd love you to meet this entrepreneur who's struggling with his business, and maybe you can help." He said the magic word to me, which is dinner. So I said, "Sure, I'll go anywhere for dinner." And somehow in the car ride from the house to the restaurant, I made a deal to jump corporate ship, join up with him as vice president. And that began about a five-year run in a software development company.
Isn't that interesting? So just to look at that moment for a minute, because so many people try and unravel career stories and figure out how did all this happen, and you know, somebody might say, "Well, she's always known that this is how it's going to work." But no, you took a BCom, you maybe thought completely different things for your career. But it wasn't pure chance either. I hear that you somehow made sure that that landlord, I think you said, you that landlord knew something about you to come back to you and say, "Is this the right thing? Are we on the right track? Is this who you are?" And then you took the initiative to say yes. So it wasn't quite pure chance that you claimed it was.
Well, there are some people, as I've analyzed this in the last couple of years, who say, "Cindy, you increase the chances of things by chance landing in your lap just by the amount of networking you do, the amount of research you do, the amount of reaching out, and so on." And so they might be right. To me, it looks like it's just by chance, and so many things in my life have happened what I think by chance. But you know, people could be right in saying that I work so incredibly hard, and I keep all doors open, and so it increases your chance of some plum opportunity landing in your lap.
It's not even that it increases it. Possibly, like you said before, there's this faith that you have. It just makes it inevitable. You can't say when it's going to happen, and you can't say what it's going to be, but you can say that it will happen. And if you have faith in that, you just keep your eyes open for the clues. They're inevitably going to come.
Yes. Well, that gives me great hope, Mark. Great hope as I struggle with my current incarnation.
Oh, there you go. We're talking here to Cindy Ross Peterson. She does lots of things, among which is being on the board of the University of Toronto Alumni Association. I'm your host here, Mark Franklin, on Career Buzz 89.5 FM and worldwide on CIUT.FM. So, Cindy, you've taken us up to the story where you were this vice president for a few years with this other sort of technology company at the beginning of technology companies. What was the thing then that switched, that turning point from that to starting your own business?
Well, I think when you're in a small business and it's owned by an entrepreneur, sometimes they are just crazy, and I'm sure I was crazy too. And so eventually, even though I don't come from entrepreneurial family, I just decided that, you know, I could probably do a business, my own business, and if I could make, you know, half the mistakes that were being made, then, you know, I'd still be quite profitable. And I needed to reduce my stress level that was being sort of externally inflicted. And so I didn't really have much of a clue, nor much of a track record, you know. So I just thought, well, I'll give it a try. And this is where the sort of a confluence of fear, but driving forward, and a little bit of faith, and 6 months' worth of salary saved up in the bank just in case nobody would hire me. And so it was more frustration and stress, and I needed a change. And so I made a change. And I, you know, at the age of 30, I put up my own shingle in a home office, which at those days was totally uncool. But I was surrounded by so much technology, nobody knew it was just me in a spare bedroom.
Yes. And what was the business idea?
Oh, just, I mean, it wasn't much, Mark. It was just, you know, me as a computer consultant, basically. I just thought, you know, I've spent, you know, at that stage, about 10 years worth of software development and watching technology happen and install it, you know, with teams of people and so on. So I knew about accounting systems. I knew about computers and networks and Windows and all these kinds of things, and was busy tracking that stuff. So it just you know, computer consulting business, me, myself, and some pals occasionally. And the business wasn't the big idea. The big idea was stepping out from being an employee to being self-employed. It was the next step that was really momentous.
Yeah, so just before we go there, just to focus on that thing that you, the confluence of things, this faith, it was disliking what you were doing, and I think that's a key driver, and anybody who's listening who's feeling like, gee, I don't really like what I'm doing, and maybe I should start a business. You know, there's this push from behind, there's the pull from forward, like, well, maybe this is a great idea, and then you said, the 6 months of salary saved up. How crucial was that? Like, to get a little cushion there financially so that, you know, if it doesn't work out, you've got a little bit of a breathing space.
That was huge for me. Some other people are more cowboys than I am, but for me, because I don't have a parachute. I don't have, you know, I did have pals who said to me, Cindy, if it all goes badly, you can move into my basement.
Yes.
And I think that was fear enough for me to make sure that I didn't fail at that. But I needed the financial comfort of knowing that I could pay the rent and the car payments and all that kind of stuff.
Right on. I bet you a lot of people relate to that. So let's go forward in the story then. So you start this, you're in your home office, you've got this 6 months worth of money saved up, and you're kind of crossing your fingers and doing what you're going to hopefully do. What happens? Where does it move from there?
Oh, it is a fantastic run, Mark. Fantastic. So the first thing I do is a couple of things. I make a database of all the people I ever knew. And I contact them and say, this is my new gig. And I did up little flyers or something that said, this is what I want to do. This is what I can offer. And I basically went on lunch dates, or coffee dates. I basically ran around and said, okay, this is my new gig. This is what I can offer. This is what I can do. Do you need any help, or do you know anybody that needs any help, or is there anybody else I should talk to? So it was one big networking push, and that got the ball rolling, and there were a couple of good folks that gave me a gig and let me get started, and the ball rolled from there.
All right, so that's the key first message, is speak to everybody, tell them what you're up to, right? Because other people can help you when you help them help you.
And I have a saying that I often use that isn't mine, but, you know, if you don't ask, you don't get.
Yes. So what happened after you did that big networking push and everybody now knows what you're doing? What happened?
Well, you have to keep at it. It isn't a one-time push. So I had to keep with it was project by project, so... I get a project, and then, you know, God love the clients, because they'd keep me around. They wouldn't want me to leave, so they'd find other projects for me to do. And then I'd add more clients onto it. But the other very cool thing that happened, couple of cool things that happened, is I picked up some speaking gigs, and I picked up some computer press wanted me to write columns for them. Because while I was doing the consulting work, and I did that basically 3 days a week, what was interesting is I made more money working 3 days a week for clients than I did slaving away 80 hours a week, you know, in the entrepreneurial environment as an employee.
Yes.
That gave me two extra days to do what I loved to do, which was research about technology. And in those days, you could wrap your arms around just about everything that was happening. And I would write articles, and I would do speaking gigs, and I would go off to clients and give them learning lunches and all this kind of stuff. So I became sort of famous as somebody, small f famous, as somebody who knew, had their finger on the pulse, and knew what was coming. And so get Cindy in, get her to tell me about what's happening and where we should be positioned and all that kind of stuff. So I had a running column or two, and then speaking gigs. I got to And then they would fly me around North America to the big shows to go check out what was happening. They would, you know, there'd be a, I knew the FedEx guy on a first name basis. He'd be carting up new technology at my doorstep all the time to evaluate. So I was not only doing the consulting thing, I was picking up this reputation as being an expert.
And so those two things together, that seems to have somehow leveraged itself into more business success for your company.
Yeah, and a reputation. I mean, you don't necessarily get rich from being famous, but people certainly know about you.
Yes.
And it, from my perspective, you know, it was a very fulfilling time. I mean, the clients really wanted me there, and I was free to run as fast as I wanted to because I really was an independent consultant. I spent 2 days with, you know, just intellectual food, you know, exploring technologies and getting to write about them and think about them. And then, you know, on the weekends, I had no stress. I would have parties and have fun and so on. So it was really a very good time.
We're talking to Cindy Ross Peterson here on Career Buzz. I'm your host, Mark Franklin, on CIUT 89.5 FM. So, Cindy, what happened then with the business? You eventually did exit that business. It was successful, and then something triggered you to say, "Let me switch gears here and leave."
There was one more step.
Yep.
So while I was being this industry observer, so I started my business in 1990. By about 1993. Somebody, a pal of mine, a librarian actually, said, "Cindy, you got to pay attention to the internet. It's starting to happen." And in those days, it was black and white, sort of BBS, you know, sort of boring conversations on screen or sharing a file. By '94, a pivotal thing happened, and that's when I went to a demo at the Design Exchange in downtown Toronto for a hardware company called Silicon Graphics, and they were basically selling the internet. They were selling servers and development environments that would let you build websites, and I was introduced to the very first of the e-commerce websites. So I was sitting there watching a demo, being jaded because I'd seen everything, you know, for the past few years, show me something I don't know, and I was just bowled over when the guy on stage pulled out his American Express card and bought a CD off CDnow.com, and I just looked up and said, "Holy smokes, this is going to change the world. What happened?" 1 year, and suddenly everything's for sale on the internet, and that's when I ran home, wrote a business plan, and started my internet company. And it was the internet company that I ran from 94, 95 to 2006 and sold.
Wow. What was the name of that company?
That company was called Adeo.
Yeah.
Communications.
And it was an e-commerce, or you were
it started out on an e-com. Well, it started out with e-commerce, yeah. And that lasted about 5 minutes because, you know, nobody wanted to do e-commerce. So we turned it into a training outfit because we had to train people on what the internet was before they could even make a decision about having a website. Then they had to have a website before they would consider doing e-commerce and yada, yada. So along, you know, when you start in the internet business in 94, 95, you're basically starting at its infancy. And
yes.
As the internet matured and people's acceptance of it matured, essentially, we did bigger and bigger things. And my team went from, you know, 3 down to just me, then back up to 3 to 10 to 15 to 20. And by the time I'm exiting, about 50 people.
50 people. So what happens after you leave? Because we've got a couple of more minutes, and I really want to get to this now, the next part of your story, to the impetus to leave, and then all the volunteering and the high-impact volunteerism that we've been talking about.
Yeah, so in a nutshell, basically what happened is I got tired. After X number of years, I had a little struggle trying to figure out a couple of things, but also we were starting to get into the repeat. And in technology, I'm sure in other fields, it's the same, you know. Social media, gosh, I've seen a different flavor of that, but, you know, same. So it started to wear on me, and I was extremely stressed, getting a little older, maybe couldn't handle it as well. And I had not had a life up until that time. I worked, you know, 80 hours a week at peak, 70 hours still, and, you know, in the 2000s. So I knew I needed to change. Same impetus as when I started my first company. I knew I needed to change. What I was going into, I didn't know, but so an opportunity happened for me to sell my company to a marketing organization. Marketing organizations by the mid-2000s were looking to up their digital expertise, And so the marriage looked like it would be a very good thing. Good home for my clients, good home for my team, all good from their perspective, and a chance for me to come on board, make sure that merger was solid. And then I did a well-planned 90-day exit, positioning myself as retiring, not competing with my old team, but truly retiring into a new life, which we celebrated. And on my last day, I worked till like 9 o'clock at night, 8 or 9 o'clock at night. I closed up the office. People had been in my office all day long, and so I had last minute paperwork to do. 9 o'clock, I leave my pass key on the CEO's desk and I walk out. Next morning, I had nothing on my plate.
Wow, quite dramatic.
Absolutely.
What age were you at that date?
I was 49.
Oh, interesting. All right, so listeners, there you go. There's a career story that, well, at least has a big shift at age 49. Interesting timing.
Mm-hmm.
So in a nutshell now, because we just have a couple of minutes, mm-hmm. since you retired and mm-hmm. living this new life, you've been really focused on volunteering and travel and adventure and this better work-life balance that you've mentioned. But this idea of high-impact volunteerism and all the people, we've got a baby boom that's going to be retiring a lot now, and I know you've been thinking about that. What does that mean, high-impact volunteerism?
I'm so glad you asked, because this is my quest and it's frustrating. So I, among my cohort, and I'm part of the younger cohort of boomers, one-third of the North American population, the first edge of them retiring this year. But it isn't just the term retirement. Retirement drives people crazy, so we have to come up with a new term for this. But at some point in your life, you know, work is still, might be still there. Family for sure is still there, but maybe there's something else. And for a lot of folks, they're looking for something meaningful to do. A lot of folks are looking to give back because they're thankful for what they've been privileged to receive for all their prior years. But what differentiates the boomers, I believe, is that they're a hard-driving bunch. They're healthier, they're healthy, they're connected, they're skilled. They've got many of them quite wealthy, and you know they are looking for something meaningful to do. Unfortunately, the nonprofit sector has been the same for many decades. It's rife with, well, there's two roles: either you sit on a board, many of which I find are boring, or you stuff envelopes, or you know you're a greeter at some event. It's very low level work.
Yeah.
It doesn't really take advantage.
You know,
of
Cindy,
the skills and
just,
connections.
We're just at time here.
I
know you've written a bit about it on your blog. What
I
is
have.
The blog? So if listeners want to go and find out more,
yeah. So let's change the volunteer models. That's all I'm saying.
Right.
Let's change it so that we can give boomers.